Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Before we start the show, I'd like to bring your attention to an incredible initiative by my friends at Across Rainbows called Back Off, Back Up, also known as BOBU. It's an offshoot project of Across Rainbows, an LGBTQ plus organization focused on redefining queer identity. The two initiatives work in synchronicity with each other. They are working towards a future where LGBTQ plus people not only feel confident and emotionally secure in themselves, but where they're able to feel physically secure whilst out and about in the community. In essence, they want you to be able to be out and to be you. Sadly, being different can make us vulnerable, and threats may not be immediately obvious. It's not always about physical violence or verbal abuse. Sometimes it's just a gut feeling, a sense of being stared at, followed, or just not being welcome. When these uncomfortable situations arise, having somewhere to retreat for immediate help without judgment or questions can make all the difference. And that's where Back Off, Back Up comes into the picture. If you'd like more information, you can check out the Across Rainbows website at acrossrainbows.com or check out their Instagram and social pages where you will find out more information. Congratulations to them for this incredible initiative, and I'm very happy to dedicate this season of the podcast to them. This season finale is a little different to anything we've done before. I'm handing over this show to...
me! I'm Nicholas Cousin, podcaster, creative and business owner, and I'm going to be talking to Andrew about being a queer creative.
That's right, I'm going to be interviewed for the first time on Queer I Am, the podcast, and I'm really excited about it, maybe a little scared to not be in control.
Don't worry, it'll be fine, but for this episode, it's over to me. So please welcome your final guest of the season, your host, Andrew Fluitt.
Yay! I'm having a round of applause too on this one.
So whatever you're up to, this is your time to settle down, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Queer I Am.
Hi, Nick.
Hello, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a little bit nervous. This is, I've not released the reins of this before.
It's a little bit,
yeah, I'm a little bit, it's cool. I'm going to chill and relax and let you take the reins.
It's going to be fine. It's, you know, it's like riding, but it's like giving over control, but it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
We're going to have fun.
We've done well so far, as you can tell.
Yes, the intro outtakes will be hilarious. So I think like we'll start off with a few like really simple questions, then we'll go into a little bit of getting to know you a bit better.
Amazing.
And then we'll go into some like wrap-ups and everything. So let's start, because this is going for, you're calling the mini-series the Festive Winter Warmers. So why did you call it that?
So the Winter Warmers was kind of like, I don't know, really. I think it was just like time of the year, a bit cozy. I hadn't been in the studio for a while. And I'd done obviously the live shows earlier in the year. And I was really keen to get back in. There is an ongoing joke, which is actually quite true, that the season was born around doing one episode and then I turned it into five.
But as you do.
As you do. But it just felt nice to do something that was a little bit cozy. And I was really excited to get back in the studio and record with people again.
Yeah, I mean, this studio is very cozy.
It's lovely. Yeah, we need a bottle of wine, I think. I think I'm missing that. But yeah, it feels festive. And it's, I don't know, it's something nice about being in the studio when it's cold outside and recording.
Yeah,
and
I think more mulled wine, really.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
And, yeah, that would nice, you know, next time for the budget.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll put that on my rider next time.
Yeah, yeah. Bring it. We could bring your mulled wine from where was it from?
Arcoblena.
Arcoblena, yes. Couldn't think of where you went there, yeah. Yes.
So, how do you feel usually about this time of the year? Because you talked about how like it's been getting cold out, but like for your December,
yeah.
How do you feel about Christmas or the festive season, I should say?
I love the festive season. I really like it when it gets cold outside and kind of the lights are all on and it's, you know, like the other night I was in the lanes and I was having a coffee and all the lights were on and it was really, really pretty. And so, yeah, I do. I don't mind this time of year. I think, you know, the bleak mornings and kind of dark evenings and stuff can be a little bit much sometimes. And when spring comes around, it's always lovely.
Yeah.
But I do try and embrace every season, really. But, you know, I have been very spoilt this year with a lot of sunshine in the summer when I was away for 12 weeks. So
12 weeks?
Yeah, when I had the 12 weeks in Gran Can. So
the big GC.
The big GC. So to come back and it'd be really cold like it is today, it's a bit like, oh, okay, don't complain. You had a really good summer. So, and I know the summer wasn't that great here, was it? So it was quite wet and stuff. So I was very lucky. So I can't complain about the cold weather.
Yeah, so why did you go away for 12 weeks then?
I needed a break from life.
12 weeks.
12 weeks break, yeah.
Is that like a quarter of the year?
Quarter of
the
year. It was nice. So I guess, you know, we did a really amazing season together of the podcast.
I know.
At Arcoblena, which was just incredible. And, you know, I think before that I'd had a few personal things that I had to kind of deal with and stuff that was kind of going on in life. And like any time, I think I just got to a point where I was like, okay, I need a bit of a break. I need to do something a little bit different. So, and I was really lucky that I could afford to take some time out from working. So I just thought, well, okay, where would I like to go? What would I like to do? And yeah, I just went away for 12 weeks and I sat on the beach and listened to audiobooks and drunk beer every day. And
you're in the Gran Canaria. You weren't just listening to audiobooks and sitting on the beach.
I really was. Everyone said that to me. Everyone was like, oh my God, you're going to Gran Canaria. You know, it's a really kind of hedonistic place. I went to the north of the island and it's mainly full of Spanish and Italian folks. Lots of locals, not very touristy. So the beach was really, really quiet. And I just spent days just sitting there and just...
Yeah.
I think when you go through a bit of a tough time and there's stuff that kind of goes on in life, like, you know, I lost my dad this year and lots of other stuff kind of happened as well and went through a separation and all that kind of thing. And I think you do literally get to a point sometimes where you just have to stop and just reflect and allow everything to kind of be there. Yeah. And that was perfect for me. I could just sit on the beach and there were days where I read and there were days where I just literally let my mind unwind everything that was kind of going on.
Yeah.
And it was really healing. So it was, yeah, I'd recommend it. If anyone gets a chance to have an extended break and really just be with themselves, it's tough, but it's amazing if you can.
So like one thing that comes to my mind when I think about doing that is like you went on your own.
Mm.
How did you deal with like the loneliness of like those some days must have been like, felt like months went by.
Yeah, it was tough. It was really hard actually. There were days where I just cried and just didn't feel like I knew what direction I had or what I was going to do. And life was just a bit much. And there were days where, you know, I was really lucky to meet some lovely people that were locals and they took me under their wing and took me out for a drink and went to karaoke and kind of made my week. And just really, it was really, really random, the whole thing. But I think I kind of learned to enjoy my company.
Yeah.
And there was nowhere to run. It was kind of like, I had to just be there. I'd committed to going for 12 weeks. I'd paid for an Airbnb for 12 weeks, so I didn't want to lose my money. There were so many times where I wanted to jump on a plane and just come home and see people and have connection. But I do think it's kind of made me a bit of a stronger person, really. And I was very lucky that I had amazing friends in Brighton and where I'm from, my hometown, all that kind of stuff, that were in touch with me quite a lot. And I was able to speak to people and, you know, fill that gap sometimes. But there were days where it was just, oh my God, like, I'm just going to go and have a nap because it will pass the time. You know, it was tough. Yeah.
So like, Yeah, I can imagine that. So I was just going to pop a pin in two things that you said. So like,
let's pop a pin in that.
Yeah, we'll pop a pin in that. We'll pop a pin in back on a few of those topics, but like a bit more lighthearted. What's your go-to karaoke songs?
Oh, God. Wow. Anything by Melanie C, as my friends will know. And the other day I did Defying Gravity.
Did you?
From Wicked. And, you know.
Did you hit the high notes?
Yeah, and I need to talk to you about this because we've got an event coming up and I definitely think that we should be, yeah, doing something quite special together. And I've got a plan in my head and I need you to agree to it.
I mean, you cornered me on Friday night and now you're cornering me now on a podcast to talk about getting into drag.
We'll talk. But I do love karaoke. I think karaoke is just like, I was talking to a friend yesterday, actually. I went to Arco yesterday and had brunch. And my friend said to me, he was like, you know, you asked me to go to karaoke and I instantly just said, yeah, I'll come, but I'm not singing. And he was like, I'd love to be in a place where I could just kind of get up and sing. And I think that karaoke isn't about being pitch perfect or note perfect, because if that was the case, I wouldn't do it. It's just about letting yourself go and like tapping into an alter ego. I love it. So yeah, anything poppy, anything diva-ish. I like to attempt a few Whitney songs very badly, but you know, you've got to do it.
Which ones?
I'd like a bit of Run to You.
Run to You.
Yeah. And I'm quite good. And My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion.
Yeah. I would love to, in my head, I really feel like I can sing One Moment in Time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I don't think
it's the Destiny bit, isn't it? You know, when she goes, Yeah, that's the stuff.
No, I think that's like very true. It's like, I don't view, I think like if you're good and you're doing karaoke, go to an open mic. Like, I don't want to hear someone good doing karaoke. I want to hear someone do like these songs badly.
Badly. Yeah. Have you been to Lucky Voice?
Yes.
I love Lucky Voice. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And you get to have the whole booth to yourself. So if there's like two or three of you, you can get in about 30 odd songs. It's brilliant. Yeah.
And then just ends up in chaos though towards the end.
Yeah. And you have no voice the next day, but it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah. To circle back around to Christmas, since we're winter warmers, I want to bring back on topic.
Yeah, of course.
For queer people, Christmas can be quite a difficult time. So what's your view or take on, you know, Christmas from a queer perspective?
Well, I think Christmas is camp for one thing. Yeah. So Christmas being from a queer perspective, that's a big tick in the box for me. But yeah, no, on a serious note, I think it can be really difficult for people because, you know, you have different relationships with friends and family and different dynamics. And, you know, there are lots of queer people that are in touch with family or not in touch with family and have chosen family. So I think for me, it's about just surrounding yourself with people that you love and spending time with quality people. And, you know, just, I don't think there's a one way of doing it. I think, you know, maybe we all think that Christmas is this perfect time of year for everyone and it's sold that kind of way. But I think it's about whatever's meaningful to you. And, you know, for me, it's spending time with, you know, my husband and with my friends and just enjoying the festivities. And it's not about presents. It's not about doing loads of extravagant stuff. It's simple things like a glass of wine and watching a movie and going for a walk and enjoying Christmas tunes and, you know, but I know that it can be really tough for some people. And I guess I just encourage anyone that is in that situation just to reach out to people that they can. And, you know, there's loads of great services out there as well that support people at this time of year. So it's definitely worth tapping into those if you can.
I mean, you mentioned your husband and friends. Like, what's your relationship with your family? Because you didn't add that to the list.
Yeah. So I'm not in touch with my family. And, you know, that is a difficult thing. But it's kind of, I don't know, really. It's one of those decisions that after a long time I just had to make. And, you know, I won't go into the ins and outs of that because everyone's got their own version and thoughts and perspectives on things. And, you know, I'm at a point now where I don't feel like I need to chat about it loads. And also I don't want to hurt anyone. But, you know, for me, I had to make a really difficult decision of, you know, walking away. And I don't know if that's forever. Right now it does feel that way. But I think we all just have to make choices sometimes in life with any types of relationships, whether it's family, friends. You know, in the last couple of years, I probably have walked away from quite a few relationships, whether it be with friends, old-time friends and all that kind of stuff as well. And I think it's just because you reach a natural point in your life where things just don't work anymore. And actually you get to a point where you start to question your own values and what's important to you and what you need in your life. And that's where I got to this year. So there was, I think when I go back to Gran Canaria and talking about that break, there was a lot of change. You know, I lost my dad. I'm not in touch with my family. Me and my husband separated. There was a lot happening in very quick succession. And I think that the thing that was my constant during that time was season 3 of the podcast.
Yeah.
And then when that was done, it was like, right, now go and have a break and chill. And I think I was probably on autopilot until that ended. And then when I got there, I was like, wow, I've got nothing to distract me anymore. I now have to just face this shit and just kind of be there with it.
Yeah.
And that was therapeutic in its own kind of way, I guess.
I think you made some really like great points. I mean, like to summarize, I think, you know, as you talked about, like, you know, chosen family. I know that's not your words. I'm adding that in, but like, you know, as queer people in particular, we have to choose our family sometimes.
Yeah.
Which I think really is what is a huge benefit to the community in general, because we get to meet people and, you know, form really tight bonds that you don't normally or not necessarily see in other communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like with queer Christmas, I'm going to put that, it can be very hard because a lot of people have to either go back into the closet or they're not really accepted, or they're the odd one in the family.
Yeah.
And it does, I can understand, like, it must be quite intense. I mean, I'm not saying that's your experience. I'm just talking generally.
Yeah, of course.
And I think, like, you know, we can be very lucky. But I think, like, as a community, there is a lot of support, but I think there's a lot of people get ignored, especially, like, the older queer community who may not necessarily have family or their partner's dead and they don't really have anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, like, important as, like, a community, we kind of acknowledge and support, not acknowledge, we need to actually do something, support
every situation.
Oh, yeah.
I think for me as well, what I kind of recognize now as I've gotten older, I'm 40 next year, so, you know.
Only 21.
I need to have a little bit of wisdom.
You're only 21.
Yeah, I don't know, I wish. actually, I don't. I really don't wish I was 21. I think what I've come to realize, well, and just going back to something you said there around families and dynamics and stuff like that, I think that in life, we have different setups and dynamics with different people. So it could be particular groups of friends, it could be families, it could be partners. And I think we all, we learn along the way to filter and to be a certain version of ourselves with each different group. And I think what I've learned over the last couple of years, and probably got to the point this year where, you know, there was so much change, was that I just couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't filter myself.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to be completely me and authentic, and that doesn't work for every scenario. And I think if you are kind of, you are filtering yourself, or you are kind of, I don't know, dreading an experience with a group of people, or you're thinking, you're overthinking it, feeling anxious about it, you have to question whether those dynamics are healthy and what the alternative is. Yeah, it's tough and it's painful, but I think there's something about being there for yourself and respecting yourself as well. So I'm not saying that everyone listening to this should just cut everyone from their lives. That's not what I'm saying at all. And, you know, none of those decisions should be taken lightly. But I do think that there is something about just being truly authentic within yourself and,
I mean, like,
knowing who you are and making decisions that support you, you know?
Yeah. I think it's also very hard. Like, you know, I'm getting into looking at 30 now. shut up. Sorry, not to Andrew, to the cameraman.
You look good for 30. 30s, do you know, it's funny when we talk about age in that kind of way as well. Like, I don't know. I think my 30s have been so much better than my 20s, and I hope my 40s will be better.
I was going to get at, it's like, you know, I, for a long time, you don't really know yourself. And I think, I mean, when I was younger and I was like, oh, be authentic. It's like when you're in your teenage, early 20s, you don't know yourself. You're supposed to go and explore and try different things and try different identities, because then you find the ones that match and the one that suits you.
Mm.
So I think it's like, and you also have to understand, it's like when you start to find out who you are and what you want, people who've known you for a long time may not necessarily like that.
Mm.
And like, you know, like parents, for example, they struggle to see children get older and adults because they still see you in that like child role. So when you start to find your autonomy, and that doesn't always necessarily reflect what your people see, what they think of you, it really impacts you.
Mm.
There's a book, I forgot what the author is, but it's an Italian author. It's called 100,000 or something. can't remember. But the main premise is that the main character realizes that everyone he meets sees him differently. Mm. And we all see each other differently. And there's like in psychology to talk about mirroring. So we mirror, you only really recognize people in what you have in yourself.
Mm.
So, and that's what you kind of ascribe to them. So then, you know, when you start changing and people start seeing the changes, it doesn't always, people don't like it. Like I stopped drinking, people didn't like that.
Mm.
And I think it's like growth. People also, it's like a reflection of themselves. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. Let's go back on topic.
No, I think it's really important. And I think that you, you do change over a period of time. You can't not. So when you do have I had friendships that went back to my teens when I was at school.
Yeah.
And I'm not in those friendships anymore. And again, that's no disrespect to those people. You know, we're not in touch and it is what it is. And I wish them well, but you do get to a point where you're just like, okay, life is just so different now. Yeah. There's things that may be in their lives that I don't relate to, or they don't relate to in my lives. I think when you butt against things in terms of like, whether it's conversations or difference of opinion or someone wanting to do something you don't want to do, and then you're struggling to tell them what you want to do and you don't want to do and all that kind of stuff. I think that that's just a result of change and just people becoming like different. And I don't think that's a bad thing. It's like sometimes you have to just kind of let go of what was in the past and just.
But I think that's a really good example is your own story with your husband. Because I mean, like you guys were together for years, decades.
well, 18 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, nearly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think like you've acknowledged with like the split. I mean, because it's getting into a better place, but it's like you've acknowledged that like there's the changes and then that you kind of redating each other and getting to know each other all over again. And I think that's really like warm to my heart to see, because I never really had like people who, like relationships, it's always like, oh, it's not working, so therefore I'm going to cut it.
Yeah.
And so I always thought like whenever my friends were like, oh, I'm having this problem, like just dump them. It's seeing you and your partner work through this and in such a cute, wholesome way.
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's really acknowledging that changes do happen and people do grow, and letting people grow is so important.
Yeah. Well, do you know, it's funny actually when you even talking about it, because it's like, I instantly feel this pang of like, oh God, should I talk about this on the podcast? But I think for such a long, long time, I had this thing in my mind that perfection is like, everything should be perfect in life, especially when it came to a relationship.
Mm.
And I think that when I met my other half, I was 21 and, you know, I found someone that I loved and loved me back, and a love that I'd never, ever experienced in my life. And so, and there was loads of things that kind of went on in my 20s. I lost a friend and, you know, different situations that maybe had just been there in the past that I never really understood, and I actually probably didn't really understand until recently. But what they all did is they informed kind of how I then became a person in my 20s. And I think that when you go through a relationship and you meet so young, when you find something that's really special, what I certainly did is you do anything to hold on to it, and then sometimes that has a counter effect because you end up suffocating yourself or the other person. And you realize that you're really making decisions or doing things based on fear. And I don't know, I think, you know, for me, it's like change is inevitable. People change. I'm not the same person I was when I was in my 20s. You can't be, and I wouldn't want to be. But I don't know, I think there's something, you know, when you love someone and when you have a connection with someone, that doesn't just go. I always find it really strange when people are together for years and then absolutely hate each other. I just think, how did that turn so sour? And that's not a judgment, but it's like, how does it go from kind of so much love to then just so much hatred? And I just couldn't do that. So, you know, I think, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think I'm just, you know, for me, it's just about respecting and acknowledging the past, but also recognizing that, you know, life does change, things happen, and I guess the point I'm making is nothing is perfect.
Yeah.
So, you know, there'd been a time where what's going on now would have been like my worst fear. Another worst fear has kind of happened. It's like, well, okay, well, now we move forward.
Yeah,
I think that's, it's a gift really, you know, if we get to have those experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
They make you stronger as people. So I'm actually really proud of where we are in a weird way.
I think it's like, you know, like in Buddhism, they talk about like, you know, not asking for there's a point to this, not asking for a easy life, you know, asking for the strength to go through challenges because you learn so much about yourself in challenges. And yes, it's awful and hard. But I think you're right. It does make you a stronger person. It helps you reevaluate.
Mm.
And I think acknowledging the changes and being scared to do the hard things, which, you know, is walking away from relationships, trying something new, you know, quitting your job and being creative or whatever it is. It's like, you know, we only have a limited amount of time on earth in this body.
Got to make it count.
Yeah, got to make it count. I mean, you can either choose whatever way you want to. I mean, but like everything you do is hard in life.
Mm.
You know, there's, you know, it's like choose what hardness you want to do. It's hard to maintain a 9-to-5 job.
Mm.
It's hard to maintain, you know, hedonistic lifestyle.
Yeah.
But it's just like choose whatever hard it is. It's hard to be successful and famous. It's hard to be poor and struggling.
And every choice you make has an opposite, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you no one can have everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we are getting very deep deep on this. It's really good, but it's like normally it's just me and you and that have the deep conversations. But Ewan's our cameraman, everyone, by the way. I think I learned so much more about myself from this year. You can't not.
No.
And I think that everything that kind of I experienced just made me stronger. But one thing I will say, and going back to obviously like the podcast and stuff, is, you know, season 3, when we did the live shows, and obviously people can listen to those now, that was a godsend to me because it was just like a focus and structure. And it was something I could, you know, we planned for months for that show, all those 8 shows. And when there was like all the shit was kind of going off and there was all the family drama and all, like my dad had passed and all that kind of stuff, I just had this focus where I was like, I can just be creative. And actually I've got all this stuff happening in the background, but this is the thing that kind of is going to get me through. And it really did. So, you know, I think it's the power of being creative and following your.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Passion.
I think you need to explain what the difference between season 2 and 3 were. Like, because it was a massive jump.
Yeah. Yeah. and you know, it's really funny actually, because I thought about this earlier, because obviously we're recording these episodes now. I don't think I really appreciated the work of the podcast until we went to the award show a few weeks ago. Award nominated now, you know. But going there, and obviously we went together, and I was like, wow, like this is really amazing. Like when I first started doing this, that wasn't even in my vision of what could happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, season one and two was all studio based, and it was all just very kind of, you know, booking the guests and chatting and releasing and promoting and all that kind of stuff, as you have to do as an independent. But season three was live shows. So, you know, we had a panel of guests for each episode, and we had it filmed for YouTube by Cross Rainbows Productions. And we had a live audience and an audience Q&A and, you know, 30 guests over 8 weeks. I mean, it was it was massive. And it was like when we were at the show in London a few weeks ago for the awards, and someone said, oh, what, you know, what have you done? And I said, oh, the three seasons, the third one was a live show. They were like, wow, that's how long has it been going? And I was like, about 18 months. And it's like, over that amount of time to have all of that kind of have happened was really, really great. So yeah, it was very enjoyable.
Yeah. What was the highlight?
The highlight, God, there were so many. Like, I think episode one, like show one, when everyone turned up, and like, I mean, that did go on for like 3 hours because I didn't have a clock on the stage and we were doing shots and we were just chatting. So that was a bit kind of, that was carnage. But to have these guests, or say semi-highlights, really respected artists and people that wanted to be on the show and said yes. Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, people like, you know, Darkwar and Nathaniel J. Hall and Jill Nalder and just so many. Then all the people walking in and watching, then people participating in the Q&A, then being able to watch it back on YouTube. Just so many highlights. I actually can't quite believe that it happened. It's weird. I think because I finished it, I was so desperate to go for a break and sit in the sun that I just was a bit like, oh my God, can we just get this done now? And it's only now that I'm really looking back and going, oh yeah, that was really cool. I like that.
It's always in hindsight.
Yeah.
No, I was in cadets. I hated the whole experience. But whenever I talk about cadets, whenever I talk about cadets, I'm like, actually, that was pretty sick. I got to do all this cool stuff. But you don't really, I think, like, it's about being present, isn't it?
Yeah, I was in cadets as well.
Were you?
Yeah, it was terrible. And I fainted in the Poppy Day parade on November the 11th in a park full of about, I don't know, 3,000 people. The sun got to me and I just kind of stood there in the march line and just, like, collapsed. Very dramatic. I was wheeled off of a wheelchair and everything. So
taken by the spirit.
I never went back. It just wasn't for me. I think my brother went, and he was doing something in the evenings. I was a bit jealous, and I thought I'd like the uniform. I didn't really. It was a bit itchy.
Was it just like the army cadets?
Army cadets. Yeah. I preferred like football boots because they sounded like high heels. Like you could walk along the street with football boots on and they sounded like the clacking of heels.
How to say you're gay without saying you're gay.
Yeah, completely. So no, it wasn't really for me, cadets, but I applaud you for looking back fondly on it.
I think what you're talking about, it was just like structure. I didn't really personally had much going on, like not going on, I had so much going on like negatively in my life. And I think like the weekends away or weeks away was just something that was just like different, took me out of my comfort zone. I completely understand that. It's like when you have, I mean, I didn't enjoy it the whole time. I don't know why I stayed, but I stayed for like 7 years the whole time.
7 years?
But yeah, because you started at, what, 13, right? Oh, no, I wasn't in school 2020. No.
Not starting liking something. That's dedication.
Five years, yeah.
Oh, my God.
9, 10, 11, upper, lower. Yeah, five years.
You're tenacious. Once I've got the boots and the...
I just couldn't quit. I don't think, like, because I couldn't say no.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I wanted to. It was just like, ended up just not saying no to things.
Just in this structure of like, I must do this now because I've agreed to it kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like, because there's never an option to say no. You have to opt out. So it's just like,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. I couldn't have done that. Yeah. I don't think my brother liked it, but I don't think he did it for very long.
I like it in hindsight. Like, I talked about it. I was like, oh, that was sick.
Mm.
Like, all the stuff, like shooting like rifles and shotguns and stuff. Some of it was really like camp and weird. Like, when you had like, air rifle, like
dance offs.
Literally, it was literally like that. It was like, it was like you had one team on one top of the hill and the other team at the bottom of the hill, and then you had to work your like pretend to move up. And it was
ready.
Just,
okay.
Yeah.
I think I was always looking for something to be creative, but I mean, I think now everyone could be creative. So if you want to do something like a podcast, you can come in a studio and do it reasonably cheap. If you want to record on your phone, you can do it. You know, in the 90s, if you wanted to be a creative, you had to go to like drama school or play an instrument or do something like that. There wasn't like the tech that's available now where people can just be creative. So I think if I was a kid now, I would probably be doing so much more of like what I'm doing, like TikTok and that kind of stuff is like, you can just be anyone and you can be creative and you can be extrovert and everyone can enjoy it. Whereas there was in the 90s, there was nothing like that. It just wasn't possible. So I think I was always searching for something really, really creative and that wasn't available. So I chose cadets. I don't really know. But yeah.
No, I get that. I think like creativity is accessible. And I think it's like, it's still competitive and hard because it's like so much on like TikTok, so many artists, so many all that. So it's still quite difficult, but it's easier to play with, I guess.
Yeah.
And in terms of like widespread.
It's more reachable now, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I definitely struggled with creativity for a long time. I'm more of a creative person, but I think like with life, we live in a society where creativity isn't really encouraged or it's seen as a hobby or something you do on the side. It's supposed to be, do the logical thing, go and be a... Especially like for queer people, when they see you're different, it's either like, I know a lot of my friends were saying that when they were questioning, they were either pushed into, oh, go be a hairdresser or squash that and go be an accountant.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I think creativity is so in goes hand in hand with the queer community. So my question to you is like, how did you find your creativity? Because you're saying that you came into creativity a bit later.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always hid it. Not from people that I knew, but I just always thought, oh, that's stupid. I was always really serious. Like, I didn't do well at school. I left school at 16, went straight into employment, didn't go do A levels, anything like that. And then, like, I remember like being 21 and going to Ibiza with my friends and thinking, oh my God, I'd love to be a holiday rep, but no, I should keep my I should keep my 9-to-5 job. I was always thinking like at the worst case scenario.
Sorry, I don't think I've known you at that time. So like you probably were very different, but you're quite camp now. I can't imagine being a rep in Ibiza.
Oh yeah, I'd be hardcore. I'd be getting them all to do. Yeah,
I'd be like, oh come on lads, let's go get a party.
No, I think it was just like, you know, I guess the experiences I had was just, you know, these reps were just fun and they were out there and in the sunshine and. But I think the point I'm making is that I was always just very much like, you know, you need to be sensible. And then if I ever felt like I wanted to do something creative, I was always like, oh, what's the point? There's no point doing that. It's not going to lead to anything. And I think that was the mistake that I had in my mind. It was like, I always felt like whatever you did should have something at the end of it. And that isn't the case. It's like, you should just do something if you're passionate about it for the sake of doing it. Even if you do nothing with it, it's better to have done it than not. So I think that definitely came to me.
Can you give an example
later.
For that?
Well, like this. I mean, you know, so how this kind of all came about, I guess, was moving to Brighton and starting to have different conversations with people and just getting really interested in the queer community. And I'd probably got interested in it a lot earlier, around kind of 2018, 2019, because I was involved in organizing a pride in my hometown.
Yeah.
So we organized the first pride that had been for years. I was on the committee. We had 4,000 people attend. It was a magical day. It was just incredible.
Is the town more conservative?
Yeah. So Suffolk is a much more conservative kind of place than.
So
than,
it was
than
a
Brighton.
Big thing to.
Yeah,
have a pride
absolutely.
There.
Yeah. So on the waterfront, we had this massive pride. And it was really special to be a part of that. And I met all these incredible people. And I just started to get really interested in like queer history and reading more books and just kind of, I guess, becoming more interested in a heritage that I'm a part of, I guess.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to Brighton, I was like, just meeting all these people that were creatives. And I was like, wow, everyone is doing something cool. Someone's doing a podcast, someone's a dancer, someone's recording music, whatever it might be. And I just thought, well, I've always wanted to do this or have... Like my dream is to have my own chat show. I would absolutely love to be like...
Come on, Oprah.
Yeah, I would love to have my own chat show. I'd love it. But, and then I was like, well, podcast, everyone's doing a podcast. Like this kind of incorporates that. But also I get to then speak about something that I'm really interested in as well. So that kind of came naturally. But I think that only came with maybe age and confidence after being involved in other things.
Yeah.
But I think when I was, say, in my 20s, I really wanted to go and do like dance lessons or I wanted to go and do... other stuff. And I was always like, oh, there's no point. It's not going to lead to anything. And I don't think I was really encouraged to do that when I was younger. So it was almost like, oh, it's just a stupid dream. Don't worry about it. Just do the job. Yeah. And then.
So for reference for people listening, so I know the answer to this, but I just want other people listening knowing. What's your non-creative job?
I work in HR.
Exactly. So you get pushed like, as like queer people, we get pushed into these like,
yeah.
Safe roles, I'm putting that in quotation marks. And it's like really not creative. And you hid that for so long.
Yeah, but I do like my day job. And I think
not that you don't.
Yeah, like, yeah. And I think it's, you know, I'm good at it. And I think that what I've learned is that there's room for all of it. It's like you can be a creative and also hold down a normal job. And you can, you know, and also I think when I first started being creative and actually getting into this, I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a full-time podcaster and be a creative. Yeah. But I actually think that would be a passion killer, because then there's so much pressure to make money from what you're doing that it no longer becomes fun. It just becomes something that you have to do to survive.
Not an outlet.
Yeah. Whereas I get to do this for fun. Like, this is an amazing way to spend my Sunday. I get to put out these episodes. Might be a few people listen to it, you know, and I say this all the time about the episodes of Morgan, creativity breeds creativity. I'm involved in loads of other stuff now as well.
I should get that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. But
Queer Eye merch coming soon.
Yeah, can you imagine? I'd be the only one that bought it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it does. And there's loads of other stuff that I'm now interested in doing. And I think that's only from just maybe having the balls to have a go, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd encourage anyone, if you've got something you want to do, just have a go, even if it leads to nowhere. Like, it's better to say that you've had a try than not, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's better to try and fail.
Try and fail.
You at least learn something.
And failure is only what is relevant to you, isn't it?
I mean, exactly. I mean, we all look at people in, like, history and we're like, oh, they like Jimi Hendrix, his guitar teacher said, you're awful. Mm. You're never going to do anything.
Mm.
Madonna got rejected 300 times.
Mm.
And, you know, it's like, there's also, people have, like, such a emphasis on time. Like, I want to do things by certain times. I mean, Morgan Freeman didn't start acting till he was 50.
Yeah.
So it's like,
well, do you know, I thought about this the other day. So I'm a very big Tina Turner fan, as you know.
Love Tina Turner.
Tina Turner's second career started when she was 41.
Yeah.
I'm in my 40s, everyone, next year. So maybe this is like, maybe the chat show is in the offing. I need to put it out to the universe, and maybe someone will be calling up and saying, you know, you really should come present this show. And I'll be like, okay, then.
You never know. You never know.
Yeah, you don't, but, you know. But I just, you know, I don't want to do it for whatever. It's fun and it's cool, and I love having the conversations and but I think you're right though. I think as queer people we do fall into different categories, whether it be, you know, maintain the job, make sure we earn the money, make sure we've got something to, because actually the reality is we've probably had a real sense of insecurity through most of our lives because we've not really known where we fit.
Yeah.
So it's like, at all costs, you've just got to survive.
Blend in.
You blend, or you're just surviving. Yeah. So it's like, I must earn money. I must do this. Because what about if the worst happens? What about if I'm rejected by my family? What about if I, you know, can't find a partner? Yeah. What about if all these kind of fears that are kind of, you know, bred into us from a young age or that have been for a long time. So I think that almost in a way, unless you're really, really confident in what you're doing or can do, I think the narrative probably a lot of time is actually be safe and survive and have a backup. And I think that's probably the camp that I sat in.
That just reminds me of one of the questions that came from the Q&A during the live shows, was that in the aging episode with like that person, when they asked, is like, what about when you're at the end and you have to go into the home and it's like your partner's dead and you're like, what do we do for those queer people who are maybe feel they have to go back in the closet?
Yeah.
And it is hard. It's like we are constantly having to adjust our identity to the scenario surroundings that we're in and the people that we're with.
Yeah, completely. And you never stop coming out, do you?
No.
I mean, you know, it's just one of those things, I guess, that always happens. But
so speaking of coming out.
Yes.
What's your coming out? So have you shared your coming out story on the podcast?
I don't know if I have on this one. I was on a podcast as a guest called Coming Out Stories with the fabulous Emma Goswell. I was a guest on that. That was really cool. I came out when I was 19. 2004. Yes, that's right. And I had a roast pork dinner with my family and then decided after that I would do it. Just a bit of a rant. I don't know.
But the roast pork made you.
I don't know. Yeah, pork sword. No. No, I don't know. I don't know what it was. I think I'd spoken to a friend the day before and she was like, if you don't say something soon, you know, maybe people will start asking questions. And I think I just kind of got to a point where I was like, okay. But I wasn't really sure what I was doing or how I was doing it or.
Yeah.
It just kind of happened, really.
What was the climate like for. Climate like? What was like the social climate for, like,
back in the olden days of 2004? Yeah.
No, because like, I'm just got in my head, it's like, okay, because like the 80s was like HIV. So then this is like, we got medication now.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, there's still a lot of like queer phobia going on, especially towards gay men. So it's like 2000s. Yeah. I mean, what was the shift? Because I was just like, I'm just from your perspective.
I mean, I probably wasn't that aware of a lot of it at that time. being 19 and not really knowing a great deal about queer history and all that kind of stuff. But I think if I look back now and understand what was going on, you know, this predates Grindr and those hookup apps and all that kind of stuff. There was Gaydar, which was like you had to like go on dial up on your thing, like, you know, and then you get an internet connection. So meeting people was kind of like, I don't know, it wasn't like it wasn't the kind of culture that it is now. I think the, you know, red top newspapers have a lot to answer for in terms of propaganda from like the 80s and 90s. And I think that stuff was still, the stigma was still there in the early noughties as well. I mean, I remember people saying to me, you know, you must be careful, like you don't want to kind of catch anything, or, you know, that was in people's minds from.
Yeah.
But then equally, if I look back to that time when I was at school, no one had same-sex education. You know, the sex education I had was how to put a condom on a banana. You know, nothing was talked about in terms of graphic sex. You know, people learned from sex from watching porn. That was probably my experience.
That's very true.
And I don't know. I just think it was just, there wasn't a lot about. And I think also where I lived, I didn't really know any gay people. So I knew a couple, like I worked with someone, but I didn't have a close circle of friends. And most of my friends were straight girls. So I think when you then come out, you then become who you think you should be without even knowing who you are, if that makes sense. So you become, you know, the friend that is gay and or is with a group of people all the time, or you become the gay person in the office or whatever it might be. And you, it's not until you start to meet other people and you start to then understand who you are that you kind of go, wow, that none of that was really authentic. Like I was just trying to fit in and maybe be who I thought I should kind of
play the role they want you to play.
Yeah. Without me even really knowing what the role was, if that makes sense. Because at 19, I didn't really know myself.
It
took me until I was probably in my 30s to really, even the last couple of years, really get comfortable with my sexuality and my queerness. You know, that took a long, long time because the shame and stuff you have just kind of lingers. And unless you identify it. I had queer therapy this summer when I was away. Best thing I ever did. Yeah, I spoke to a queer therapist about intimacy, about sex, about relationships, about queerness. Mm-hmm. Best thing I ever did because it was, again, someone who understood the narrative and
that's so important,
a safe space where you could speak freely. And, you know, should shout out the pink therapy list because, you know, if people do want therapy, there is an amazing list out there of people that are trained and have the experience to work with other queer people.
I think it's like there is so much like pressure of what, talking more specifically about gay men for a second, like queer people in general applies to, but for gay men in particular, like, well, particularly just because it's my experience, it's just like there was all that kind of expectations of like, you know, you have to be like this, you know, slut dropping, tongue popping, like yas queen kind of person.
Yeah, you've done it well. Well done.
Thank you. I know. When you come out, it's like you feel like you have to play that role because it's like, oh, this is what gay people are.
Yeah.
So I'm that. So I have to do all this stuff. And then I think as you get like older, you realize like,
yeah,
that was just what society told you was acceptable in the realm of being gay.
But that's still happening now. Like you go out on the scene and we go to the bars and stuff and there's bottom shaming and there's people are still constantly obsessed with whether someone's a top or a bottom or, you know, what sex you're having or have or haven't had and who's the most popular. You know, I think that narrative is still kind of playing out in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
I actually feel really... Do I feel worried or concerned or, I don't know, just younger people that are coming up now and are growing up in a social media age and a Grindr age and a hookup app age, I think it's probably tougher than it was when, I mean, don't get me wrong, I was in a community, well, there wasn't a community, I was in a town where I didn't really know anyone that was gay. I wasn't really sure who I was or how to be myself. But when you're now living in a world where everything is so... accessible and out there for everyone to see, I think that's probably more pressure. You know, I'm glad that when I went out clubbing there was no Facebook and Twitter and when I went out clubbing in 2002 there wasn't camera phones. Let's just take that in for a moment, everyone. No camera phones. I went out with
people
my
just living in the moment,
my Nokia 3310 playing Snake. I just, you know, there was just an innocence around all of that kind of stuff. And everything is great now, like everything's so accessible. But imagine if you're now, I don't know, 20, having to come out and and you've got that constant comparison.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend who works in a school or working with like young people, and like it's really, I mean, when I was in my teenager years, that's when like social media really started to take off. So I was on the tail end of it, but I could not imagine being like 9, 10 with social media.
No.
Because I think like you can't, it's like school was school and you can leave it there and then you come home and then you can like have your other life. But this is, you're taking it around with you. Like, so cyberbullying is such a huge thing. Cyber, like shaming and everything on that. And I think like it's so true. And I think like we do have like this community, this view in the community of, you know, you have to be fitting these boxes. Like, we're turned around now. Like, we're like, we now shame our own community into being certain ways.
Yeah, and, completely.
And I think it's like, you know, with like social media, it's like, oh, you're not wearing the right things. You're not doing the right stuff. You're not being the right kind of,
who you should be.
Well, yeah. And I think like that does create so much pressure. I mean, like a few people, like a lot of people I know don't like the hookup culture, but they feel like they have to do it because that's what's expected.
And how else do you meet someone if you're single? I think the other side of it, the flip side of it, is there's loads of positives.
Like, there is loads of positives.
So
as well,
you do get to have, you know, and we're all victims of it, aren't we? There, you know, you get to have connection with people on social media. You get to find out things instantly. You get to make memories via reels or, I don't know, message people that maybe you would, I mean, you know, this podcast, there's people that I reached out to on Twitter and Instagram that I'd never met before.
Yeah.
That responded and said, I'd love to be on the podcast. You know, if social media wasn't available, I wouldn't have been able to do half of what I've done
That's
with
true.
This.
Yeah.
But I do think it's that other side of it, which is just the negative. But I think going back to the community, it's just, I don't know. I think there is a community, but I just think there is still a lot of work to do in terms of how we all support each other, how we lift each other up and how we, I don't know, challenge people that don't do that and bring people down.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Because I think there's a lot of bystanding as well. And, you know, when you go into a bar and a drag queen's ripping into someone and someone could be really, really vulnerable and don't have the skills or, you know, experience to deal with that situation.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tough one.
No, I do completely agree. I think like supporting each other, and there are a lot of benefits. I've met some lovely people off of social media and Grindr and all that stuff. And, you know, some people stay in your life for a bit. Some people, it's one night thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had some awful stories as well, but I think it is that balance and focusing on what is the good parts.
Yeah.
And I think like acknowledging that there are bad parts as well, because I think as a community, we need to like band together and be like, look, there's certain parts that we need to work on. Yeah, and you know, like you're saying, like, there's so much creativity and beauty and love and support in the queer community, but it's just, it's all so surrounded by bitchiness and sassiness, and I get like...
But that, I guess maybe that's the same, you know, in the non-queer community. I mean, you're probably going to have people that are, I don't know, fulfilling certain roles or being who they think they should be and maybe not supporting other people. And but I think going back to your original question around like, the community then and versus now, the great thing as well is that we have so much more like literature and podcasts and TV shows and all of that kind of stuff. Like that just didn't really, the amount of people I've spoken to on this podcast that talk about watching Queer as Folk with the volume down with their bedroom door closed, their parents wouldn't find out they were watching it. You know, that was a narrative like for that time. Whereas now you can walk into a bookshop and there is a wall of queer books and, you know, podcasts and all that kind of thing. I don't know, it's just I think we are living in a better time from that respect where people can learn and educate themselves more.
Yeah, and I think that's really like, it is, I'm all for more queer art, you know.
Yeah,
I think like films and all that stuff as well. I mean, like but I think like we also need to support good queer art, and I think also grassroots, like people, I put, this is me going on, putting on a high horse now, but this is like people like want like Disney and all these places to make queer movies and it's like, I don't agree with that. Not that I don't, they should, but I think, you know, there are a lot of really good indie queer filmmakers and, you know, we should support them. And then, you know, as people rise up, I mean, then, you know, you get the big brand production companies who go, oh, this actor is really good. Let's hire them.
Yeah.
But if we're not supporting the grassroots, it's never going to get to the higher level. And we can't, we're never going to force Disney to make, or sorry, I shouldn't say Disney, I should say like production companies to make these kind of movies that we want. Because they're going to look at the bottom line and be like, what's going to get most people watching?
Well, yeah, they're looking at it from a business point of view, aren't they? Rather than it being an authentic point of view. So,
So going back to being creative in the queer community, so what made you start this podcast?
I think it was just, you know, moving here, having great conversations with other queer people. And like I said, you know, really feeling like I wanted to be creative and do something a bit different.
Yeah.
And I was really interested in what people were telling me. So I thought, well, if I'm interested, will other people be interested? And it just kind of started from there, really. So season one was local artists, and then season two expanded, and then obviously we know season three went live. But yeah, it was just born from being interested. And I'm nosy. I like chatting with people and having conversations and getting under the skin of different things. So it was just a natural thing for me to kind of do, really, I think.
Yeah. So what's the main aim of the podcast?
It is to, I think for me, it's about celebrating and amplifying queer voices.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we've just talked about some of the stuff that maybe isn't quite right in our community, but there's a lot of positives as well.
There really is, yeah.
And, you know, I think there are so many people out there that are doing incredible things, whether they're making art or they've got good stories to tell, or they're just living their full truth and just being great people. And I don't know, for me, I feel like those are the stories that aren't told often enough. So that was what I wanted to do. It was just kind of have those conversations and just, yeah, amplify those voices and keep the conversation going, really, being part of something, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's so much creativity in like so many funny like shows, especially like in Brighton. There's so many like great queer things that you can see that are just so different.
Yeah, definitely.
I went to a queer fashion show last night, which was
was it really good?
It was really good. I was really surprised. They asked me to go up and walk, and I was just like, because they're like, you look great. I was like, I wasn't really happy with my outfit. I was like, I'm not going to win, but I know it's not about winning.
Did you walk?
No.
Oh, it's not about winning. I'm not going to win. The first thought pops in your head. The true color is shining.
I'm very competitive, but it's one of my worst traits. But my second worst trait is that I'm not very good at things.
Oh, no, I'm sure you'd have rocked the runway. Yeah.
I wasn't confident enough, so I couldn't sell it. Like, people were selling their outfits.
Yeah, you've got to feel, if you don't feel good about it, you're not going to do it well, are you? So.
Yeah, it was a £20 cape from Amazon. I was like, the people spent, like, creating outfits. This cape is not holding up.
But I love that you went in a cape. So clearly you had, like, some sort of fashion ambition in mind. That's really cool.
Yeah, we went for, like, I was trying to go for, like, Pope, kind of, like, religious.
Okay.
Like, kind of, like, don't know what it was supposed to be, but it was like supposed to be like kind of like cardinal,
okay,
pope, and then it turned into like kinky Freemasons instead. It was really odd.
I think it's great you did it.
Yeah, no, it was very
happy with that.
It was very.
Whereabouts
fun.
Was it?
Was it Fabrica Church?
I have no idea what that is.
It's near, for everyone listening, it's near the Ivy Asia.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah, I know where you are. Yeah. Okay.
It was a really good event. Oh, nice. But like I'm saying, like there's loads of little grassroots things, and there's so much fun, like comedy, and you know, like, and so much art that goes on into the queer community. And I think it all is an outlet for people, for their creativity. And I think we really should support queer grassroots artists.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what's your hopes going into 2024? I mean, we have the 0.5 season. So, what about season four? Is there any big plans?
Well, this has been released as season four, and then this is season four.
Yeah.
And then I don't know actually around what would be next on the podcast. I've got some ideas, but yeah, I'm not really sure at the moment. I just want to like release this season and then see how it goes. I have a small book to write.
Just a small book.
Hopefully by the time this goes out, I'll have signed the contract, so that'll be cool. So I'm writing a book, so that's gonna need to be finished by the spring, and then I don't know, just see what else comes up, really. I'd like to do some voiceover, and I've always been interested in doing stuff like that as well, so I've done some reels and things, but no one's really listened to them. So
could you give us a little bit of voiceover now?
No, I can't. I'm on the spot. Like, you know, something like, it's not just chocolate gâteau, it's M&S chocolate gâteau, you know, that kind of thing.
I love that.
Yeah. So I don't
Tingles.
Know. Yeah. I'd like to just do more creative stuff, really, I think, and just see how it goes. But
nice.
Yeah. Just, it's fun. It's all, anything that you do has got to be fun. So that's what I'm hoping to do.
So we're going to end this podcast with a little quick fire round. So,
okay, question. This is so unprepared. Thank you.
I know. Literally,
unexpected.
Just so unexpected. Just on the spot. I'm going to, this is all coming out of my head right now. I'm not reading at all. So question number one.
Okay.
Best present you've ever received?
God, I wrote these questions and I really don't know the answer. best question present I've ever received.
I feel like there should be a tick.
I got a karaoke machine when I was, I got a microphone and on a plastic microphone on a plastic microphone stand when I was 7, and a guitar, and that's when I loved Tina Turner, so I still do, obviously. So I used to like pretend to be her with my plastic microphone stand, and that was probably the best Christmas gift I ever got.
Which Tina Turner song did you use to pretend to do?
Oh, all of them, really. Yeah. It's really weird. I think about now, I was like 6 or 7 talking about, like, you know, a man cheating on someone. And I'm like, I didn't understand any of the lyrics, but I'm just like, you know, I'm your private dancer, you know. I'm just like, you know, and I'm just like, I had no idea what I was talking about, you know, literally talking about a hooker. Yeah, but there you go.
It's funny because you say that, like, when I was in primary school, we, like, you do dancing to songs and we did, you know, you spin my head right down when you go down. Didn't realize that at the time what that song was really about, but like that is really inappropriate to make children do.
Yeah. Wow, there you go.
Yeah. Straight people, what are they on? best present you ever given?
I took my husband for a trip to Iceland.
Iceland.
Not the food shop, the country. And we saw the Northern Lights on his birthday. I think that was pretty special. So I think that's probably a pretty good gift.
That was a pretty good gift. Did you go to the Springs?
Yeah, and the Blue Lagoon, which is closed at the moment, isn't it? Because of the volcano. Yeah.
Or what's your festive tipple?
My festive tipple. Okay. My festive tipple, I think, would be I like a Prosecco with a limoncello shot on the bottom.
That must be so sweet.
Yeah, and strong. Or a Prosecco with slow gin in the bottom.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really good, and you get pissed really quickly.
Is that the goal?
No, it's not the goal, but it just happens. I think the last time I did that, when we had family round, I was slurring by about 11:59. It was really, I was like, "Oh, Merry Christmas!" So no, that's a good one, and I do like a rum and coke as well. It's something about a Morgan Spice rum at Christmas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you a board game person or boring?
Boring. No. Yeah, boring. So board game or boring? I find them boring. I hate board games.
Oh, do you like playing board games or do you find them boring?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I wrote this for my...
That's not on choice.
I find them really boring. I've never played Monopoly. I actually really hate board games. I don't mind Uno. Yeah, I just think it's a waste of time.
Really?
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel quite strongly about this.
Like, even like card games or like...
anything? I don't mind Uno.
You know.
And I used to play card bingo with my Nana, which I used to love, which is really sweet. If you get a board game out at Christmas, I'm just, no.
Are you more like, because you want to do something practical, or?
I think so. I think for me, it's just like, I don't know, it's just quite an intense experience, and everyone gets a bit competitive, and I don't know, and they go on. Oh my God, well, I played one year around a family member's house, and it went on for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And I was just like, literally just, this is like a waste of a day.
But do you think that's like a sign of the times? Because like back in the day when there was no TV or anything, they had to like use 2 hours playing a board game.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, maybe because our highlight of Christmas Day was watching EastEnders when I was a kid. So I don't know.
speaking of EastEnders, what's your festive movie choice?
I have a couple. So one of my favorites is Home Alone 2 Lost in New York, because that's the first film I ever saw at the cinema.
With Donald Trump in it.
Donald Trump's in it, yeah. I don't watch it for him, obviously. And I also really like Office Christmas Party, which is written by the people that wrote Horrible Bosses, and it's just funny and stupid. Yeah. And we always watch Scrooged on Christmas Eve with Bill Murray. Oh,
right,
like a bit of Scrooged. Yeah, that's always quite
fun. That's a good move.
Yeah. Yeah. So a few there.
That's fair. Favorite holiday song?
Well, I've got a few. So my favorite holiday song, one of them is, I really love Kelly Rowland's version of Do You Hear What I Hear, which is on the Destiny's Child album, The 8 Days of Christmas. I love the Christmas album, Have a Merry Christmas by Mary J. Blige. And I love Whitney Houston's version of Joy to the World, because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And aside from that, probably Last Christmas by Wham. Oh, and I actually, Step Into Christmas by Elton John.
Nice.
Because you can't understand a word he's saying apart from Step Into Christmas, which is just funny. He's just like...
Pretty niche ones out there.
Yeah, it's quite varied, isn't it? Quite eclectic. Yeah.
I like Boney M's Jesus Christmas Child. Or like,
Mary's Boy Child.
Mary's Boy Child. Yeah. God, I butchered that name.
Yeah, I like that. Actually, that's a good one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turkey or trimmings?
All.
All.
I think we're having duck this year.
Duck?
Yeah.
Very festive.
Goose is the...
Yeah.
Goose is quite festive, but we've had duck before. So yeah, I think we're having duck with all the veg and...
Nice. Duck is lovely.
Goose potatoes.
Sorry, and... vegans. Favorite holiday tradition?
Me and my other half, we, at Christmas Eve, we always have cream cheese on really nice bread with smoked salmon and Prosecco and watch a Christmas movie.
God, that's so bougie. Get the caviar as well.
And watch a Christmas film. And yeah. But then what polishes it off, which is really, really nice, is like those really like awful frozen sausage rolls that you put egg on top and then put them in the
oven. How do you go from that to sausage roll?
Because you just, I don't know, it's part of the whole thing. So yeah, so do you like a bit of smoked salmon with cream cheese and yeah.
And then go into sausage
rolls, but then like obliterate like 20 of them in one go, just like keep putting them in until you're like, you can't move because you're so full.
Oh, and then you get that really, I don't know, I like the feeling of like when you can feel your stomach stretching because you eat so much.
Yeah, yeah. I like to look pregnant at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the aim.
It's like my nan used to say whenever I went to her house, it's like, if you ever leave the table not in pain, she didn't feed you enough.
Right, okay.
So I always take that to heart now. So if I ever leave a table and I'm not in pain.
In pain.
Didn't eat enough.
Yeah. That could fuck up a lot of people, that kind of comment.
That's true.
But I think if you enjoyed
that's
it,
just that's,
that's a good thing.
That's
my nan's love. My nan always did really good food as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could travel anywhere at Christmas, where would you go?
I would go to Lapland.
To see Santa?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to be in the snow at Christmas Day. Or New York. I'd like to be, yeah, that'd be pretty cool as well.
Yeah.
Go to the big Christmas tree and go and see the Rockettes at Radio City Music Hall. That'd be really cool.
Okay. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
And we already did this one, but we can answer it again.
Yeah.
What's 2024 looking like for you?
Bright and hopeful.
Bright and hopeful. And to sum up 2023 in one word?
Adventurous. And... adventurous, is that right? Yeah, there was adventure. Adventurous, chaotic, interesting, hard, happy, tough, loving, all
adjectives.
Of the above. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. But that's how every year should be. It shouldn't just be linear and, you know, it's got to be a bit of everything, isn't it? Yeah.
Very true.
Thanks, Nick, for interviewing me.
Oh, no, thank you for being a guest on your own podcast. I've been Nicholas Cousin, and this has been Queer I Am. Thank you, everyone. Have a great festive season, and speak to you all soon.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Check out the others from season 4 when they're released. And why not browse through season 1, 2, and 3? There are so many incredible conversations for you to enjoy. It would be great if you could give the podcast a like. A 5-star rating would be even better, and share it with your friends. Let's get everyone joined in the conversation. You can follow me on Instagram. My handle is @FluiActually, and check out my website, fluiactually.com. Until next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.